The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today is Dr. Michael Duggan, who is retired from a teaching position in the St. Mary's University in Calgary, Alberta. And so I welcome you, Dr. Duggan, and please tell us a little bit about your work in St. Mary's and the surrounding situation in Calgary, we could say.
Well, it's an honor for me to be on this program, and thank you for the invitation. My world opened up when I was in high school. I went to St. Mary's Boys High School. The girls' high school was separated from the boys. And across the street from us was the Shaare Tzedek Synagogue. And it was just at the time of the Second Vatican Council. So I'm picturing about the year 1965, which, by the way, will be the era in which the documents we will discuss were formulated. But I would stand in front of the synagogue. There were two things that struck me. My father would drop me off there some mornings as he was on his way to work at the Calgary Stockyards. And I would see people going into the synagogue for morning prayer. And I thought to myself, now that is an excellent way to begin the day. And it wasn't an ongoing fascination of mine, but periodically I would look at the entrance to the synagogue and say, sometime I would like to learn that language, and I hope I would be able to. And as I attended a few lectures, even in high school, that people were giving about the Second Vatican Council, that's when I heard about the Nostra Aetate and Jewish-Christian relations, and that piqued my interest to the point that I studied humanities, I studied philosophy, and then in Rome, I did degrees in theology and, of course, biblical studies at the Pontifical Biblical Institute. And to this day, week in and week out, I'm in contact with the Calgary Council of Christians and Jews. And together, we continue to discuss matters that are central to developing understanding. And one of my concerns is to invite Christians, particularly Catholics, to return to the synagogue and study the Hebrew scripture with their Jewish colleagues so that we recognize the common inheritance we have as the children of Abraham.
Well, that's very good as a background. And then your biblical studies, of course, were also continued in Washington, D.C., right? You went
exactly. I did my dissertation on Ezra and Nehemiah under Professor Christopher Begg at the Catholic University of America.
And so that was a few years ago. And now you've happily retired, but when you were at St. Mary's, what were the areas that you were teaching and working in terms of the student body?
I taught a wide span of classes. I had been schooled, of course, in a rather precise exegesis of Hebrew scripture. But since St. Mary's was just beginning as a liberal arts university, I was invited to teach world religions, Eastern and Western. And actually, I had very little background academically in Eastern traditions. But it turned out to be the best thing for me because I learned to, I became very close to people in Buddhism, in the Sanatana Dharma tradition that we call Hinduism, Taoism, and various traditions. And this was part of the adventure of Calgary 25 years ago, where we moved from being kind of a city that was focused on oil and gas exploration, and we were quite isolated, to now the world has come to Calgary. And I would tell my students, when we visit synagogues and mosques and the various ashrams, you will meet the greatest people that live in this city now.
And so the population of Calgary from the 1950s, when that's when my memories go back to Calgary, was, from there, the explosion of the population, of course, has been enormous. And it was all caused by, as you mentioned, oil and natural gas and other products that flow from the petroleum industry. So here we are in a situation of educating young people in sets of traditions that, of course, have been brought to us from various parts of the world in recent decades. Now, how did you come to focus on, after your initial interest in what's going on in the synagogue close to your high school, how did you develop the interest then in Jewish-Christian relations in Calgary?
When I was a student in Rome, one of the things that I did as a student at the Biblicum was I would attend the great synagogue in Trastevere periodically. That was my first experience of being in Sabbath services. And it struck a very profound chord in me that coincided with my research into the foundations of Judaism in what we call Second Temple studies, which would be in the 5th century before the Common Era. When I returned to Calgary, I made sure that I would attend a synagogue where they were teaching modern Hebrew. And there was a woman from Israel who helped me to at least to be continue my practice of reading Hebrew reasonably well. And from there, my friendships blossomed within the three major synagogues in Calgary. And so when I would teach, for instance, courses on the Gospels and New Testament literature, I would invite my students in the introductory class to come with me to the synagogue so that they would have an experience of the environment where Jesus of Nazareth and St. Paul, and actually all of the great figures at the roots of the New Testament documents, that's where their experience came from. And so for me, understanding biblical texts and interpreting them in the present time caused me to be grateful for my being rooted in the experience of friendships in the synagogues.
And so, of course, the way in which Jewish-Christian relations has developed with local populations in three, as you mentioned, three major synagogues, probably the three traditions. And there was an interesting development in Calgary where years ago, Rabbi Ginsburg was instrumental in linking the Jewish school system to the Catholic school system in Alberta, so that there could be a development within the small Jewish community that would allow him to have the benefits that Catholics have in Alberta with regard to schooling funding for the Catholic schools. So let's think now. I want to draw attention to a book in which you have a chapter, and this book is called "Turning to the World: Social Justice and the Common Good Since the Second Vatican Council." And as you mentioned, Second Vatican Council ended in December actually of 1965. So here we have a book edited by Dr. Carl Still from St. Thomas More College in Saskatoon, in Saskatchewan. And this college then has been associated with the University of Saskatchewan, of course, and you have been involved with them, especially in this conference, which led to the production of a book, The Turning to the World. So tell us a little bit about that conference and in your participation in it.
The conference was a remarkable gathering of educators in Catholic universities and traditions across Canada. One of the major participants was Gregory Baum, who was a peritus at the Second Vatican Council, who was with the Canadian bishops, but he certainly was an expert in Jewish-Christian relations. The conference was now seen to have an auspicious date. It took place in March of 2013, which was the month in which Pope Francis was elected to be the pontiff of the Roman Catholic Church. And we will celebrate his 10th anniversary as Pope this month, in the just within a week or so of when we are speaking right now. So the conference was focusing on turning to the world. The people at St. Thomas More felt that in Canada, we needed a stronger grounding in the document of the Pastoral Council, a constitution on the church in the modern world. The Latin title is Gaudium et Spes, which refers to joy and hope in the first words of that document. Because in some ways, Roman Catholics over time have tended to become somewhat insular and introspective in their self-understanding in a manner that was not consistent with the Second Vatican Council. So this conference was based on the Latin term aggiornamento, which is the word that was used by Pope John the 23rd in 1959 when he called the council, and he wanted the council to be updated with the modern world, enter into dialogue with the modern world. And so that was the inspiration of the conference. There were papers read not just on theological topics, but on the works of Catholic authors in the 20th century and philosophers, as well as reflections on the status of how we are doing in Canada to welcome refugees and people from across the world in a manner that would be consistent with the openness that is called for in the Gaudium et Spes.
And so the conference in 2013 then eventually became the book that I'm mentioning, Turning to the World, edited by Carl Still and Gertrude Rompre, both of the St. Thomas More College in Saskatoon. And so your contribution to this volume is certainly an important one, and I would draw attention to some of the themes that you developed: conscience, freedom, and humanism. New foundations for Catholic social teaching at Vatican II. So tell us a little bit about how you approach this topic, and now in its written form, as a chapter in this important book.
The theme of my particular contribution came from my teaching the documents of Vatican II and the historical context of it in my courses at St. Mary's University. And I learned conversation with students who had not really heard of the Second Vatican Council, I learned that the first place to start is with the experience of being human. And this is where Gaudium et Spes, the constitution, pastoral constitution on the church in the modern world, begins. The first chapter focuses on human feeling, that it the joys and hopes, the griefs and the anguish of the people of our time, especially of the poor or the afflicted, are the joys and hopes, the grief and anguish of the followers of Christ as well. So there is a focus on interiority there that also was emblematic of the Second Vatican Council. As we read through the early parts, the first chapters of this document, chapter 16 and 17 treat a very important issue that was central at this for the changes at the Second Vatican Council, because these focus on the dignity of the human conscience. Chapter 16 says that deep within each person is a resource that instructs them, and it is a law that is laid on them which they must obey. They have in their hearts a law inscribed by God, and that is in their conscience, which is the most secret core and sanctuary of the human person. Now, it's that interiority of becoming acquainted with one's own personal uniqueness that was very captivating to my students. And then in Gaudium et Spes chapter 17, immediately in the following section, it speaks about the excellence of freedom. And there the council fathers says, it is only in freedom that people can turn themselves toward what is good. And the only way that they can accomplish the good and to experience their dignity is in this fashion. The dignity of each person requires that person to act out of conscious and free choice, as moved and drawn in a personal way from within, and not by their own blind impulses or by external constraint. And this focus on freedom became very prominent in the Declaration on Religious Freedom, which was one of the other documents of the Council. I'll just give one example. In the First Vatican Council, I looked up in the Latin text the word libertas. That word freedom in the First Vatican Council is used only once. In the short document on the Declaration on Religious Liberty, the word freedom occurs 28 times. And so what we see in the council is a confidence in that people draw having wisdom within themselves, that they must be faithful to themselves in shaping their life.
And so the mystery of truth then is central to this question, and the idea of freedom is to challenge the individual to follow his or her conscience at every moment and every decision of life. So that does draw attention to the wonderful mystery of human life and how every life is to develop in terms of an orientation toward the true purpose of life in a community, that the individual is centered on that responsibility to live up to the potential that each person has, and at the same time to see that potential in relation to the entire community, starting from the family and then moving into the wider concentric circles in which we move and live in our daily lives. So you have found that this profound insight into the true meaning of freedom, that it's not that I can do whatever I want, but I should be doing what is called for by the conscience that has to be developed, of course, through education, that we have to continually challenge ourselves to deepen that sense of responsibility.
Perhaps I could build on your point there. Is in one of my classes, I had three young women from Ukraine. And when I was talking about this, and it, just as you are indicating, Father Frizzell, this personalism is distinct, is represents a contrast to individualism. Mm-hmm. For instance, we read about individualism is what makes the marketplace function these days. The council speaks about personalism because, as you're indicating, we only become a person in relationship to others. Mm-hmm. And we find our conscience in evaluating the quality of our interaction with others as whether we are establishing relationships that are healthy, life-giving, authentic, generous, and transformative for the world. So my students from Ukraine, when we were talking about these texts in the Second Vatican Council, they said, well, we'd like to do a presentation on the Euromaidan movement. And at that time, I said to them, tell us more, and we want to hear from you. So what they did was they recounted their experience of going to the central plaza in Kyiv it would be November and December of 2012, and protesting against the imperial imposition from Russia upon Ukraine. And they were saying, we want our own society as an independent country, and we are going to work with that, for that. They experienced the leadership of priests, both Roman Catholic and Orthodox, that were in the square with them. And as we know, tragically, in that time, eventually people in the square were fired upon. But one of the stories that came out, I read this in recent times, was a young woman spoke to her father, who was a professor, and he said, don't go back there. She said, we are going back there, but you must come and join us, because this is a matter of conscience for the common good, not just of us as people who are seeking independence, but for the common good of human beings, to know that we are called to freedom in such a way that we can become healthy and that we can support one another.
And so this this very poignant example then has great resonance with what's going on in our world today. And so we pray for those young women and for all those people of courage who are striving to sense the insight that freedom relates profoundly to responsibility, and otherwise freedom is not productive in the proper sense, we might say. So as you worked on that theme with your students, we find that it would be good to think of the relationship between the individual and the common good. Now, the Second Vatican Council was developing that relationship very effectively, I think, in the document, the Pastoral Council on the Church's relation with the world at large.
So yes, exactly. For instance, in paragraph 30 of Gaudium et Spes, it's under the title that we must transcend an individualistic morality. And we must base our lives on solidarity. Now, of course, this is the great word that St. John Paul II developed. And that is what led to transformation in Poland. So what we see in this document on the second of Gaudium et Spes is it has brought a transformation in history, not just inside the church, but beyond for instance, confines of the church. But at the same time, the transformation has happened because of the council's emphasis on we must work for the common good. We must respect the human person. We must recognize our equality with one another and work for social justice. And Pope Francis is the person who says, we as a church will find our identity if we go to the margins of society and live in solidarity with refugees and with people who are neglected. As a result, what we can see from this amazing document is that it really does speak very strongly to our present time in the 21st century.
And of course, we're challenged in so many different ways that the sense of a learning process should be, of course, part and parcel of our efforts to share with each other and then getting to know the true and deepest needs of individuals and of groups in our society, especially those that are shunted aside. We are then able to, I hope we're able to grapple with some of the challenges that each community is facing. Now, your work then is drawing attention to these fundamental principles and the way in which we draw attention to the need to be up to date. You used the word aggiornamento. Let's think about how being up to date then resonates with the philosophical and spiritual insights that we're trying to appreciate more deeply in our modern world.
Yes, I think one of the things that I think is important to keep in mind for all of us when we're thinking about the world situation is, I learned this myself and from my students, to recognize that probably at no time in the history of the human race have there been more people doing more good for more people than the time in which we live. We can be overwhelmed by news of the tensions and conflicts, but I had a friend who worked for the United Nations and was in Darfur, which is a very difficult place in Sudan, and she met students from, I believe they had studied at Harvard, who were there to say, we have come here to get ourselves a real education, because this is the circumstances in which anything that we have learned up until now will really be grounded in reality. And we must learn from the people who live in camps such as this.
And so the ominous situation of suffering then it does challenge us in a very special way to grow into the mode in which we can recognize that we can't solve all the problems of the world today, but there is something that we should be doing that will improve the situation for ordinary people throughout the world. So Dr. Duggan, it's been great sharing with you today, and I hope that all will go smoothly in your future developing work, and that we'll be able to enjoy other opportunities to share. And thank you very much for joining us for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews, and we invite our listeners to be with us again next Sunday at 11 a.m.
Thank you very much, Father Frizzell.